Welcome, folks, to episode number 223 of the Lethal Muller podcast. Come to you live on Phantom Podcast Network's fbnet.popping.com. That's right, here on the Facebook page at The Lethal Muller, of course. Here, your home for all action, movie, cinema, reviews, and more by, of course, the one, the only, Lethal Muller. Yours truly. Tonight, we're going to be looking at the film in question here, which is, of course, one of the quintessential classics of the 1980s when it comes to, of course, the Vietnam War. Hamburger Hill, based on a true story, and, of course, one with an extensively great cast. And I do believe the movie started out as a TV movie. And then when they realized what they had, they decided, of course, chuck it on to the cinemas. And lo and behold, did pretty damn well. And, of course, VHS head as well. Now, of course, you get it hot in hands in, of course, Blu-ray quality, HD. And, yeah, some great stuff on this one. And the making of this is an even more fun story than that as well. Folks, I am the Lethal Mullet, and welcome to the show. Here, as we're now back on, of course, the Phantom Podcast Network channel, our home channel, where we were for years. And, of course, we did have a smaller channel that we were off for the last year or so, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network, still attached to FPN. We're always part of FPN. But now the decision that I've made is that we're going to be on just the FPN, just so we can give you more content. Focus, of course, more on video, interacting with you, the listener, the Lethal Mulleteer, as we look at action cinema and much, much more. And some of that is taking ideas of you, the listeners out there, on the different action movies that we're going to be covering. Me being the carrier of the Mullet torch when it comes to these sorts of movies, I've seen most of the ones that all of you grew up with in the 80s and 90s and beyond. And so it's time to celebrate those and really look at what made those movies, you know, stick in our minds so well and become one of those things when you flash back to them, you go, hey, they were pretty good, weren't they? That's right. So we're going to be looking at those, and even the next couple were ideas from a few of you Mulleteers out there. So here gives you an idea of what we're covering. Obviously, it's not Hamburger Hill, but on the next episode, we're going to be looking at Mark for Death. Arguably, probably one of the best, if not the best, of Steven Seagal's early films. And one of the better displays of Aikido on screen. And I think this film in particular plays to Steven Seagal's strengths as a lead. And at the period, you know, he was pretty unstoppable. You know, he had himself, Dolph Lundgren, and Jean-Claude Van Damme, who were really, you know, battling it out for VHS supremacy at the time. Or, well, they were going to cinema at the time too. But this one, Mark for Death, was definitely, I think, the pick of the bunch of the first four movies in particular. Now, you've also asked out there, a few of you, for this one to be covered. So episode number 225, we're going to look at arguably the best and the most commercial successes when it comes to, of course, his work. And that is, of course, Under Siege. So we'll be looking in that. And, you know, I think, again, the cast on this one was, you know, the strongest Warner Brothers had put together when it comes to the films of Steven Seagal. And, you know, Seagal's an interesting character. Obviously, over the last few years, you know, we've been looking at different films of his in particular on here. And, you know, you got to give it him credit. Back here, he was, you know, really, I think, something new people hadn't seen before. They'd seen all the kickboxing and stuff like that. It was Steven Seagal. It was a different style of fighting. Aikido in particular is a grappling art and certainly doesn't have the same cinematic style or visual that those different martial arts have. The rest of them are very hard-hitting, very much what you've had with, you know, Chuck Norris and many others in the past, so it's definitely not of the same ilk. We're looking at that. Obviously, in the very last episode, we looked at Jess Speakman's The Perfect Weapon, which had been covered previously back in the 2020, I believe it was. And it was certainly one that was great to revisit, I think, with, again, a new renewed interest in of course, Kempo karate, American Kempo, which is still a real different style that I've never really experienced personally. It is one that, you know, obviously has Hawaiian influence, Chinese and Japanese influence in it from the great Ed Parker. And, you know, he had some amazing students, not just Jeff, obviously, but one of those being, of course, Elvis. Elvis Presley, yes. When you see Elvis do all those moves when he was in his 70s cape era, that was karate, folks. Who would have thought? I thought that was just doing, you know, moves for his Las Vegas shows or whatever he was doing at the time. But no, it's karate. It's Kempo karate. So there you go. Maybe they should have had that more in the movies, eh? Huh? Who knows? All right, so with that, that's obviously where we're heading. A lot more videos. So we're going to be putting out the shows on Phantom Podcast Network, the audio podcast, on a Tuesday in the States. So if you're in Australia, yes, we're in the future, which means it'll be out Wednesdays. All right, so that's the full, polished, normal podcast. And it'll be on Spotify and iHeartRadio and Apple Music, all the usual haunts and places. And you'll find this fella on there chatting action movies. Yes, this fella with the moulet, as they say in Melbourne. Yes. Coined by, of course, Kevron. Yes. Kevron, the reader nerd, Russell, and, of course, his lovely wife, Erin. Coined that phrase a little while back. A big shout out to, of course, Kevin and Kyle, who run Fanta Podcast Network. And they're always doing a fantastic job over there. Got to, you know, really applaud not only their energy, because their energy over there is just fantastic, but really what is great is that they've always had a passion for all the fandoms that they have, whether it's, you know, straight up comic book cinema, sci-fi, with their love of course, everything, Star Wars, Star Trek, and Orville. along with, of course, football, Highlander, everything. They just do a fantastic job. And, you know, I think the thing is it rubs off on everyone else. We all enjoy getting in there and chatting about the different shows that we like. And, of course, just the it's just the love of, you know, each fandom that we have. And I think that's important that we're all there to celebrate it. That's what the platform was there for from the start. And in particular, you know, Kevin and Kyle are just two of the nicest people when it comes to welcoming more people into the fold with their shows and stuff like that too. And each of those people that's involved in the channel as well with their own shows are all interesting and fantastic people. So definitely go and check out fpnetopopping.com for all those shows and, of course, this one. And as you can see on the ticker below, you can catch me out on social media at The Lethal Mullet, still out on all the platforms. We're now in TikTok and, of course, Snapchat as well. We haven't really posted anything there yet, but when we do, we'll let you know. And there you go. Because I think there's only a few followers there on that one too. So we'll just wait until there's people that actually want to see some Lethal Mullet material over there. But no doubt it'll be interesting facts on martial artistry, action films, B-movies, action film stars and B-movies and martial artistry and so on and so forth. We're actually trying to put a few more Australian things in there too soon. So, of course, talking about Australian film, particularly the 1980s, you know. We're going to look at some of the earlier stuff then and some of the Ausploitation stuff. One of those being, of course, one I planned to do a little while back, but we got derailed because of a movie that was coming out at the time, I think. And, of course, The Man from Hong Kong, which we will talk about. And that's definitely got some influence from not just James Bond, but the Bruce Lee films of the era and, of course, just Australian bikey films and stuff like that too. Interesting times. And, you know, let's just say it's got a hell of an opening. But tonight, folks, we are here to chat about a great film. That is, of course, Hamburger Hill, here on episode number 223. Here's the film in particular. Hamburger Hill. That's right. Hill 937, 10 days and 70% casualties. Just to give you a little bit a layout, I'll look at some of the stuff they've got here on the just on the promotional copy here of the Blu-ray itself. And it, again, it's based on fact. This actually happened, you know, and this is, you know, obviously the fictionalized version of the story on the on film. Although, you know, I do believe John Irvin, the director, was, you know, very much shooting this in a, you know, as close to a, almost a documentary style, you know, very realistic. So the men of Bravo Company are faced with a battle, uphill battle, and literally an uphill battle on 937, better known as Hamburger Hill. And of course, the soldiers that are going up here, some are raw recruits, some are experienced, and they're going up against some of the toughest in the North Vietnamese Army. This is not the Viet Cong. This is the NVA. So this is the actual North Vietnamese Army itself. And they're in what they call the A Sha Valley, which you're about to hear a little bit more about. The film is unrelenting in its depiction of war and violence, and particularly of the period of the Vietnam War, which is an interesting time. You know, we just come out of World War II, you know, and which everyone was pretty much involved in. And Vietnam obviously was after also Korea and also Malaya for Australia. Australia was involved in that conflict as well. So when Vietnam came along, you know, it was an interesting time, not just for obviously the conflict itself, but everything was changing. Technology was changing. The helicopter came into it, the Huey, the Iroquois. So that came in and changed the way that even the cavalry was doing this, air cav were doing things. The chopper became this thing that carried you into battle and took you out as well. So that was a huge thing, and it was so new. Even obviously the forces were getting used to that. Obviously weaponry was changing too. You know, everything was moving from bolt action and self-loading rifles to automatic rifles and assault rifles. So the invention of both the M14 and the M16 for US forces happened in the midst of, obviously, the US part of the conflict. Obviously, to everything from general purpose machine guns, the M60 was brought in, all different types of, even the types of gear, the uniforms, everything changed in that span. So it was very much a modern war at the time, even though it's so many years behind now. So even again, too, as we've talked about previously on some of the other shows, the Australians also updated all their stuff too. And you can see that in a similar film about one of the bigger battles the Australians were involved in and one of the most successful, which was the Battle of Long Tan. And you can find that in the film Danger Close. So if you're a fan of a certain actor from Vikings, and he's also in Warcraft, World of Warcraft. You'll know who I'm talking about when you see him. He is actually the lead in that one as well. And it's, again, it's pretty accurate to what was happening in the Battle of Long Tan, the Australians as well. And still very interesting to this day, any bit of this history is. And we thank all the veterans for their service, obviously, too, at times. You know, what they went through, the sacrifices, is amazing, you know, and brave. So with this one too, obviously what is interesting is that it's, you know, it's really, I really say it's unrelenting because it is, because I remember seeing it on VHS when it first came out in the late 80s. And, you know, it's, I think it was only MA or MA 15 plus here in Australia. So, you know, we were able to see this film, but I don't know how they did get an R rating. It was, you know, it's unrelenting. And, you know, when you've got arms being blown off and all sorts of stuff, and it was a very bloody film at the time too. So it's interesting. But the thing is, the way it's shot, it really brings you into the midst of the battle, and it really drags you into this conflict. You really feel like you're part of this Bravo company that's going out there too. All right, so let's have a look at some of the cold, hard facts of Hamburger Hill. Okay, so 1987 war film based on, of course, the Battle of Hamburger Hill. And it was about May 1969 when they did the assault on the hill by the 3rd Battalion, 187th Infantry, 101st Airborne Division, Air Mobile, better known as the Screaming Eagles. And, of course, they're on the ridge of Dong Ap Bia mountain range, and it's near the Laotian border. Of course, it's also in central area of Vietnam at the time too. The hill in question in this one is, of course, Hill 937. Okay. So this is a film directed by John Irvin, starring, of course, Dylan McDermott. And this is his first movie, folks. Of course, he's gone on to a wider career. But here's some of the bigger names now. We've got Stephen Weber, Courtney B. Vance, Don Cheadle, and Michael Boatman as well. Now, it's an interesting film that was shot in the Philippines. And, you know, a lot of films were shot in the Philippines in the 80s that we all know really, really well. Obviously, some of the Chuck Norris pictures, obviously the Ninja pictures at the time too. So things like Enter the Ninja were shot there. And, you know, a lot of those big ones were. And that's what I think is, you know, an interesting thing. It always comes back to the fact that, you know, films like this was shot in, you know, very similar conditions to, especially the locations to Vietnam itself. And it definitely has that look and that feel of an epic jungle battle area. And still, to this day, I think it's one of the most grittier, you know, versions of the events too. Like, it just really is something that drags you right into it. So, as we said, starring those guys, with cinematography by Peter McDonald. Peter Tenner edited this movie. Music was by Philip Glass. Production company was RKO Pictures. And it was distributed around the cinemas by, of course, Paramount Pictures. Came out August 28th, 1987. And it did $13.8 million at the box office. So not too bad for a film, obviously, you know, it was that time period as well. So a platoon of soldiers fighting in Vietnam, and this is the opening. It was set in 1969, and we see a soldier dying on a helicopter as we come through here, where basically they're sent out constantly in battle. And this is a platoon of the 3rd Battalion, 187th Infantry, 101st Airborne. Air Mobile, as they call it. And from here, we get to see a truck full of new recruits come in, replacements. Some of these are Languilli and Beletsky. And from here, basically, they're just raw recruits that just have no idea what's going on. It's something that was basic when it comes to a lot of these Vietnam films. We get it to see this event through the eyes of the recruits. Same happened with Charlie Sheen and, of course, Platoon. We get to see it in Full Metal Jacket and many, many others as well, too. For here, we have, obviously, Doc, who's kind of like one of the gents that's going to be bringing in, you know, these guys into it. And he's kind of, I always think of him as kind of the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the place. You know, he is played by Courtney B. Vance. He's, without a doubt, one of the great characters in this, because he's been through everything. He's, as they say, short on time too, because he's going to be soon getting out of the war. Short is one of those terms in this conflict, which means you're short on your duty time. It means basically you're almost on your way home. And again, this is one of the many different terms that they used in the Vietnam War. You can see it in a lot of the movies. They use that sort of stuff that really brings, I guess, a lot of credit to the movie or whatever to be a little bit more real when it comes down to it. But as we go through this, you'll see what I'm talking about. Courtney in particular really is one of the best actors in this and does a fantastic job. So they're taken under the wings of Star Sergeant Adam France, and they spend basically the early days on the base, filling everything for sandbags and just basically hanging out, being part of the squad. And then, of course, the base is attacked. And again, it's very sudden because they really lay this out well, where we get to know some of the recruits pretty quickly through just the mundane stuff that goes on with soldiering. As some of my mates that have served even in the Australian Army, they're very blunt about the fact that, you know, there's 5 to 10% action, 95% sitting on your bum having a cigarette half the time, or drinking a stubby, whatever it was, waiting around for things to happen. There's all this go all the time. But, as far as action and stuff like that, that's what it's really like. And I think they do this well. The way John Irvin's put it together is that, when the battle does come, it's full on. But that's where it's great when we have these great character actors, like Stephen Weber as well, Courtney B. Vance, and of course, even Dylan McDermott. They're around these younger and obviously raw recruits who have no idea what's going on. And it's that weariness in the way that they portray the role that does so well. So from here, they get a little bit of training too, where there's a Viet Cong deserter who comes in and slowly gets under the wire and shows just how they can get into the actual stage of the base itself. And of course, the way that they just easily will make their way in. So from here, the lieutenant and the sergeant come through and, of course, let them know that they're going to have to go up the hill. And a lot of the fact that is that they know exactly what's going up that hill means. And, of course, the fact that, not many people are coming back. So from here, they get basically a little bit of time in the base to chill before, of course, heading up to the Ayrshire Valley. We hear a little bit of exposition about just how rough it is up there, and of course that the NVA are all through that area. And of course, this is where things are going to happen up Hill 937, which they've been told to take. It's been bombarded by aerial attack and stuff like that too, but at this stage too, it needs to be taken from the ground. So from here, they get all taken in and move their way through. Well, the interesting things in this, we get to see it from every troop's perspective, and I think that's what makes this really interesting. When it comes down to the characters in lead, in particular characters that, like Stephen Weber's officer, or even Courtney B. Vance playing Doc, everyone gravitates to those experienced people to get them through and, really make their way through. And that's what makes things interesting. Now, this film itself has a great cast, and we're going to talk about some of these guys. And, of course, some of the weapons that they have over the time too. Again, this is at a period where there's a lot of advance, a lot of change happening. And no doubt for the soldiers involved in this period, it was an interesting time because they themselves were going through a period where, they were used to a certain equipment, weapons, vehicles, all that sort of stuff. And the change, when it came, they weren't ready for what I would class Tupperware rifles at the time, made of plastic, not just steel and stuff like that too. Of course, that being the M16A1 when it came out. So there you go. But let's get into it. So we've got platoon leader, played by Tegan West. His character was Terry Eden, and him being a second lieutenant carried the M16A1. So we had Stephen Weber, who plays character, of course, Dennis Worcester. He's the platoon sergeant, and he's sergeant first class, and he also carries an A1 M16. Dylan McDermott plays Adam. Oh, that's a good name. Plays Adam Franz. And, of course, he's third squad leader, staff sergeant, and M16A1 he was also with. Don James plays David McDonald, Daniel. And he's the third squad assistant leader, Grenadier. And he carries an M79 grenade launcher. Now, obviously made famous by the Terminator. That's right, Judgment Day with a grenade launcher. That's right. So with the 79, that was a self-contained unit back in the day. But with the M79, they sort of moved on from just using just it by itself and then did an over and under job later on with the M16A1. And that's what we see in the movie Predator, where, of course, Dutch Schafer, played by, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger, uses that one. But back here, a lot of those guys were only carrying a M1911, 45 on the hip, and a 79 grenade launcher as their main weapon too. And yeah, you can see that used also in Apocalypse Now. Very, very hippie sort of one too, because it's all done under definitely this sort of drug-induced haze that you see. It's really cool. Psychedelic is probably the right word. So we've also got Courtney B. Vance plays Abraham Doc Johnson. He's the medic. And I think it's, again, one of the other reasons everyone gets to know Doc, even though doctors, like all times, always are, you know, the ones that give the toughest advice at the time as well, really let you know where you are. And his rank is Specialist 4, which I'm not really sure where that sits. I'm guessing it's somewhere above private or something like that. It's definitely not in our Australian ranking system. Michael Boatman plays Ray Motown. He's a rifleman, M16A1, Specialist 4. Harry O'Reilly plays Michael Duffy. He's the machine gunner. And of course, he uses the M60 machine gun, Specialist 4. Daniel O'Shea plays Gags or Gagan. He's assistant gunner and machine gunner. He uses an A1 M16, and then when he's not using that, he's on the pig. That's right. The M60 was known as the pig due to its size. The Aussies use that term as well. Michael Dolan plays Harry Murphy. He's a radio man. He's M16A1, Specialist 4. We also got Michael A. Nichols. He plays Galvin. He's a rifleman, M16A1, Private First Class. Don Cheadle plays Elliot Washburn, and he uses both an M16A1 and an M60 in this one too. He's a rifleman, machine gunner. What's interesting is Don Cheadle is very young here, you know, what probably one of his first roles. But he does such a great job in this too, showing, you know, what the experience is like, and particularly by the end of it, what it's like for somebody to then, you know, live with what's happened. Tim Quill plays Joseph Beletsky, rifleman grenadier. He uses an AK-47, M79, and an M16A1. He's a private first class, one of the new rookies. Tim's quite good in this. You know, he is a little shocked about what's going on around him, as most are, but he questions everything. And, you know, it's kind of like that youthful thing of, what do I do? How do I do it? All that sort of stuff, sort of all popping up together. I think he does a fantastic job in this as well. He's great. We've also got Tommy Swerdlow plays Martin Bienstock. He's a machine gunner and M16 rifleman as well, a private first class. And, of course, then we've got Anthony Baril plays Vincent Alphabet Languilli. Again, one of the more interesting characters in this too, because, you know, we get to know him quite well because he's making a lot of humorous quips and stuff like that. He's a rifleman and uses M16A1, private first class. So there you go. So the producer in this, Marsha Nassatia, had a son who fought as a soldier in the Vietnam War. And it was one of the reasons why she came up with the idea to get this movie happening. Of course, with this too, you know, it's at a time where, you know, again, a lot of movies were getting done, along with documentaries of the Vietnam was, well, you know, it was definitely in the minds of people at the time. So they decided to put this together, and basically, according to Irwin, Paramount didn't really want to do Hamburger Hill, but it was something that was picked up, I guess, after shooting would happen or something like that too. So, you know, I think that's what makes it interesting. It's such a gritty film. I think that's, you know, until you've seen it, they probably would have thought it was just another one of the many myriad of VHS films that were coming out directed towards the Vietnam conflict too. So, which, yeah, it just makes it very, very interesting. So, the movie itself could have been released well before Full Metal Jacket and of course Platoon as well, which with the you know, they were the critical darlings when it comes to these sorts of films. They were definitely ones which had that feel of, you know, getting I guess the experience down pat, because that's what this was about at the end of the day. It was you look at it, even the cover of this, you know, it is about a soldier's experience, isn't it? As we look at it, you know, it is about what it was like to rely on your comrades and to obviously, you know, serve, you know, for a cause. In this case, you know, going up that hill, which was the mission. So the mission was to get up there as high as possible as you can and obviously, you know, gain that ground, which we'll talk about the battle itself in a sec. But I think that's what made, for especially for the makers of this, such an interesting idea as well. So, you know, as I said, Paramount had been brave with it, but I think the thing is, it wasn't considered a popular subject at the time, according to the film company. And they wanted to see how the others had gone through. So things obviously like Platoon and Full Metal Jacket. But when they turned out to be huge, I mean, it's a completely different kettle of fish. So how did this film, you know, go critically? Well, Vincent Canby of the New York Times said it's one of the most well-made Vietnam War films that narrows its attention to the men on a single platoon in a specific operation. And I think that quote really nails it. That's exactly what this is. It's getting down to the grunts and what they're doing on the ground. And a lot of great war movies, that's really what it comes down to. Some of the best work is done when it's showing, you know, the actual effects that it has on people that are actually living in the midst of this. And particularly with Hamburger Hill, you know, we've got some great characters that we get to spend time with that you get to know. And then they're thrown into the meat grinder, folks. They really are. There's no getting around it. That's basically what happens here. And we, you know, you don't really get a second chance afterwards. That's where they're heading. And it's a tough, uncompromising look at things. And I think that's what makes it all the more rewarding once you've gone through that and really seen what it means to be someone that's gone through too. All right, so folks, we're going to look at some of the trivia in this one. And I think at the end of the day, find a little bit more about behind the scenes. So what do Vietnam veterans think of this one? Well, it was remarkably positive. A lot of people said that this was, you know, had authenticity and the brutality just really, at the end of the day, you know, brought back that feeling of what people went through. So a number of the Vietnamese advisors served to ensure the authenticity of the Vietnamese people. And John Irvin in particular made sure that the film looked real. The characters in the movie were named after men that the writer, James Karabatsos, had actually fought alongside with too. Interesting. What else we got here? So the film was both this and Platoon in 1986 was shot in the Philippines. Many of the actors hadn't been out of the United States beforehand. Well, for a lot of the actors, this is their first film too. So it's interesting how that all comes together. John Irwin had filmed a documentary in Vietnam during the war. Some of the extras during filming were US Marines stationed in Subic Bay in Philippines. This is the first cinematic film of Courtney B. Vance as well. Dylan McDermott lost 25 pounds during the production of this one too. So what's interesting is that the trailer to this one had the song "We Got to Get Out of This Place" by the Animals playing throughout it, which of course, you know, is at the start of the film too. It's the feature film debut, as we mentioned, of Dylan McDermott as well. And so the opening prologue states this. On the 10th of May, 1969, troops of the 101st Airborne Division engaged in the enemy at the base of Hill 937 in the Ayshore Valley. 10 days and 11 bloody assaults later, the troops who fought there called it Hamburger Hill. That pretty much nails what this film's about. This is a gritty film, one that if you haven't seen it, you must. And particularly if you want to see something that's even more real than Full Metal Jacket and Platoon, which are both good films. But for me, this is the pick of the bunch, folks. Hamburger Hill is the experience of course, the Vietnam War. You got to go and check it out. So, folks, that's everything today for, of course, episode number 223. For, of course, Hamburger Hill here on the Fender Podcast Network's Lethal Muller Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and we'll catch you next time here. Same place, same channel.